Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, December 27th. I'm Ray Graff. This is the program where I make small talk with a guest until somebody calls or the end of the show, whichever comes first. And today, what a reason to call you have. We talk real estate today. You're thinking about buying or selling a home? Well, you are in luck. We have two real estate professionals in the studio today to answer your questions. Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate and Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District are waiting for your questions. And you can give us a call right now if you so desire. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. You may also email us if you wish. voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But the number again, 800-348-2551. Real Estate after the news. Oh, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. You buying or selling a home or residential property? Are you maybe considering such a scenario? Well, if you've never done it before, you know it can be a daunting process. And even if you have, it can still be overwhelming. You are in luck today. We welcome back two real estate professionals to answer your questions. Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is here. He is a go-to expert in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. Renata Lewis is here with her glasses on. Renata is with Keller Williams Capital District, also leads the Renata V. Lewis team. She's a go-to source for real estate industry insight and advice. Alexander and Renata, welcome back to the show.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Well, that was enthusiastic. And give us a call at 800-348-2551. The hangover's wearing off on my guests right now. That number is 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Wintertime. It's time for the real estate professionals to hibernate, yeah?
Not at all.
Really?
Not
oh, do
at
tell.
All. Not at all.
I thought this was kind of a slow time.
It does slow down a little bit. I think the holidays have something to do with it. However, there's always buyers out there, and there's always a need to sell. So houses look beautiful this time of the year, holiday season. They're nicely decorated. It's beautiful white Christmas right now. So what a better way to present your house than the way it looks right now.
But in general, isn't it a tough time to show a home?
It could be. Again, having the conversation with the sellers, making sure that the sidewalks are cleared, that it's safe to walk around the property. Overall, it is a little bit harder to show on the exterior. If you have a pool, it's closed.
Yeah.
You know, different conditions. However, if the need is there, absolutely it's doable, and houses sell all year round.
Have there been any late year rushes in interest in buying or selling thanks to impending acts on Capitol Hill in Washington?
Well, I think, this past January and February, March were actually really busy. I think things slowed down a little bit between Thanksgiving and now, but it's beginning to pick back up. It's very possible that this January could be as busy, maybe even busier than last January.
It's got to be a schlep for a real estate agent, though, to go out in all this cold. I know that you'd probably rather be somewhere warm right now or not.
Yes, Aruba would be fabulous.
Well, you got to make the money, though.
Yeah, you do. You do. Listen, it's winter. It's cold. Nails break opening lock boxes, frozen lock boxes. Again, it's the season to, you know, January rolls around and people, again, need to sell and buy, and we're out there. And it's a good market to actually put your house on the market, I feel, because you will be the driving factor. Mm. Not a lot of inventory out there. So if you do need to sell, be proactive before the spring market hits and now you have a lot more competition.
Yeah, that's a really good point about the inventory. Inventory is really low, and I think what we're seeing is the buyers who are actually out there schlepping in 5-degree weather with a few inches of snow, they're pretty committed to the buying process.
Yeah. You have a captive audience.
Absolutely.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Alan Shartok was on the other side of the glass in the control room, and I went through the talkback and said, "You have a question?" And I could see him mouth the words, "Buy or sell." What will you make of that, and what's the answer?
you know, I think now's a good time to buy or sell, I think, depending on what you
want
to do.
You know what? That's such a cop-out, Alexander. Hey, buy or sell? The Shartok wants to know.
I guess it depends on what you want to do.
Again, you could be if you're a buyer, a lot of times you have to sell because you're already a homeowner. So if you're buying to upgrade, it's a great time to do it right now because we're still in a good market. Interest rates are starting to creep up a little bit, so yeah. Something that we do need to start paying attention to. They've already went up a little bit this year. They're anticipated to go up another 3 times, I believe, in 2018.
They're still fairly low.
But they are low, so it's still an affordable time to buy, and it's still a good projected time to buy.
Our number, once again, is 800-348-2551. We're joined by Alexander Monticello and Renata Lewis, and let's go over to Bob in Palenville. Bob.
Thanks for taking my call. And this question is right on the point you were just discussing. I heard a recent report that sales of pre-existing homes were up in November, and that was a good sign for sales pricing. On the other hand, in just a few weeks, we'll have a new tax bill, which will moderate and cap state and local taxes, and that's been discussed as having a negative impact on home pricing. So, are prices of existing homes going to go up, or are they going to go down?
The crystal ball, please. Alex, you first.
Well, I don't know for sure, but I think it depends on what market you are in and what your property taxes are. You're in New York, in Ellenville?
I'm in Palenville at the moment. Home is in Hunter.
Okay. All right. I guess if the average tax bill is over $10,000, it's possible, and I think the National Association of Realtors has also put out a statement to this effect, that this tax bill could impact the sale of homes with tax bills over $10,000. But it's hard to say. Ray, you were...
Well, I mean, north of Westchester, what percentage of homes are really going to hit that $10,000 threshold around here?
I think most homes here, if you have a home in a city that's assessed around $250,000, your tax bill's around $10,000.
Okay.
If you're probably closer to $400,000 in the suburbs, your tax bill might be around $10,000.
Okay.
So
we'll see what happens. In short, we don't know, Bob. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Are potential buyers or sellers asking you about this in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, a little bit. I think between the holidays and just people taking a little bit of a break, I haven't really had a lot of discussions about it. I think we do need to educate ourselves a little bit more of exactly how it's going to impact everybody.
There's a lot of misinformation floating around.
There is.
And we'll know more soon, I hope.
Yes, yes.
What would one do if one was thinking about, I'll wait till spring, I want to move my house? What is a checklist of things that a potential buyer should be doing or thinking about doing right now?
I would say have that conversation with a professional, so definitely call an agent that you trust. Sit down with them. Getting the home prepared for market is very important. Whether it's improving the home, just updating it a little bit, painting, every agent has a checklist that they work with to help the house present better and add a little bit more market value to when you are ready.
We've talked in the past about presenting a home, and I know there are sort of third parties that do just that. It has to be very difficult, though, for those who are living in a home and really don't have a place to go to make that thing look stripped down and clean and ready to go if you're living in it.
Yeah, I think it is a real challenge, especially if you have children or pets. Oftentimes, what we'll recommend to a lot of our sellers is they may store things in either their basement, their garage, or even get a storage unit to help thin out the house a little bit. The hope, though, is in this market, if you price it right, you might be able to, within a few weeks, maybe get a potential buyer.
Hmm.
It's important. It's a commitment. When you're ready to sell the house, it's a commitment. So once we start marketing the home, it is a little bit of an inconvenience for the sellers. But again, as Alex has mentioned, the goal is to market it correctly and price it aggressively and move the property quicker so that way the showings do stop. But ultimately, the whole goal is to get the house in the best show-ready factor possible because that will influence on the amount of buyers that will walk through, the type of exposure that we get, and ultimately get you the best price that we can.
Do either of you ever encounter the situation where you have a buyer who is gung-ho, ready to go, and you put it on the market, and then 3 weeks later that person says, you know, I don't want to sell this?
So the seller doesn't want to sell this?
Yeah.
I'm actually on another side right now where I have buyers that were purchasing a house, and the seller decided that he does not want to sell it.
That was my question. Does
yes,
that happen?
It does happen. It does happen.
And so what happens then? You presumably both of you work on a commission basis. This doesn't make you very happy, I would think.
Well, yeah. Well, this, of course, for the agent side, as far as not getting paid for the commissions. However, it's really affecting the client. The buyer client a lot because we're already deep into inspections, we're deep into attorney approvals, and they've already applied for the mortgage. Luckily, we held the appraisal process, so they didn't have to, no one went out and appraised the house, which saved them a little bit of money. It's been a while since I've been this deep into the transaction that something like this had occurred. And ultimately now we're trying to fight for all of our buyer expenses to be paid by the seller due to the fact that he no longer wants to sell the house.
Has it happened to you, Alex?
Yeah, I think it does happen, unfortunately. I think one of the things that I try to do is when I'm meeting with somebody who's talking about selling their home, I like to remind them it's expensive. It's a real pain. There's a lot of stress involved. I also try to understand what their goals are because in some cases it doesn't make sense to sell.
Yeah.
And so working through that process early on, I think with the seller can help avoid some of these pitfalls where somebody eventually, you know, has a contract to sell their home and decides they no longer want to move.
And once you have that contract to sell your home, as a seller, you can still back out at the last minute?
No, it's a contract. But the reality is it can be very difficult to enforce it.
And probably very expensive to
enforce
it.
Exactly. Essentially, you'd have to hire an attorney to sue them for specific performance, which takes a lot of money and time.
So unless you were an attorney yourself, in which case, never sell to an attorney, right? All right, let's take a break and think about that. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Real Estate Today. Renata Lewis, Alexander Monticello, and you. More of you coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Merritt Bookstore, Millbrook, a classic independent bookstore hosting book clubs, author events, workshops, and with a children's section dedicated to both books and toys, MerrittBookstore.com. The Discovery Center, presenting December break programs featuring the 9th Annual Cookie Burner Stroll and movie-making workshops for the upcoming Karner Kids Film Festival, AlbanyPineBush.org. The New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Services, offering assistance via a new website, wishing WAMC listeners happy holidays. Find a lawyer, nys.org. George Heigl Antiques, Boston Spa, New York, offering estate sales services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses, 518-396-7974. And Cindy McMahon Hunt Real Estate, ERA, selling city and country properties throughout the Capital Region, including Northern Columbia and Southern Washington counties since 2003. GetCindySold.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. We talk real estate today with Renata Lewis and Alexander Monticello, and you at 800-348-2551. It's a call-in show, you know, so let's go to the phones, and Martha in Troy is on. Hi, Martha.
Hi. Thanks for this program.
Sure.
So here's my question, and it regards the the future tax deductibility of interest. What if, when you were going to buy property, if you formed a business entity and bought the property as a business and then took the interest off as a business expense?
Hmm. You know,
how does that sound for a loophole?
Yeah, so actually a few of my clients have asked about this, and I know that I've to redirect them back to their accountants, and their accountants are still not sure of that answer. So unfortunately, I'm not sure I have an answer.
How about what is the viability, regardless of the deductibility, what is the viability of buying a piece of property as a business entity and then basically renting it to yourself?
Well, I think not very viable, because the rent then becomes income. So I don't think you can certainly buy a piece of property as an LLC, and then people do this all the time, and then they rent it to other people. But if you're renting it back to yourself, I don't think that avoids the problem. Ultimately, I would recommend talking to a tax professional.
I don't know, Martha. I mean, you could try it, and if you don't end up in jail, you could call us back and let us know it works out well.
Okay, I got your number.
All right, fair enough. Well, you could call from jail, too, as a matter of fact. Thank you for the call. And if you are in jail, the number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. So things in the market still percolating along for both of you?
Yes, it's really a good market. So I'm projecting next year, get this.
Yeah.
Okay. The millennials are going to come out next year.
Okay. Now, how old are the millennials now?
The millennials are about, I'd say, between about 26 to about 29.
Okay. The young scamps.
Yes.
Okay. And they're ready to buy that first home?
So this is what's happening. I have about 4 buyers right now. They're coming out of mom and dad's homes. Mm-hmm. They've been staying with mom and dad. They came out of college. Have jobs, but not necessarily the career or the industry that they were aiming for coming out of college. They're good buyers because they have been able to save money. And they're out there, they have a good down payment, and they're ready to buy. So anyone that's selling a smaller house, it's going to probably will be targeting a millennial buyer.
Millennials, eh? Mm-hmm. You see that trend happening there, Alex?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think we've seen some of that this year, and I think it's going to be picking up through 2018. I think 2018 probably will be as busy, maybe even a little busier than 2017.
Really? So you're not petrified about the new tax bill? You think the market will continue to be robust?
Yeah, I mean. I'm petrified all the time about other things.
Yes, yes. Welcome
but,
to my world.
Yes, I think, you know, I don't think the tax bill is going to have an enormous impact on the local market. Ultimately, if people have to buy or people have to sell, some of these other issues are often, you know, not necessarily first-tier components to their decision. You know, they may be secondary. So, you know, there might be some impact at the higher price points where people have tax bills of $15,000 or $20,000. We might see some more impact there.
I ask you this every time, and it's cliche, but I'm a radio host, and I'll ask it again. Buyer's market now, seller's market, what do you see? Are more people interested in dumping a home or buying a home at this moment?
No, it's as I think we've said all year, it really is a seller's market, and it's pretty challenging as a buyer. Oftentimes, properties that are priced right are getting multiple offers. Mm. And so if you don't have the best financing, or in fact, maybe you need a seller concession or a little extra help with the purchase in terms of financing, you can be at a disadvantage. So it's, I think, very competitive for buyers. The challenge, though, is if you're selling your house and buying another one, that's where it's good to be a seller, but not good to be a buyer, because you're not able to coordinate the two.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's define the seller's market. Seller's market is inventory that's out there that's less than 6 months. So this is why it's called a seller's market. There's not a lot of inventory mm-hmm. out there. So when we are speaking to the sellers, as Alex had said, they want to sell. but they're worried about where they're going to go. But meet with your agent, talk to your agent. You know, I've proposed knocking on doors in neighborhoods to find a home for those sellers.
People who don't have signs out there.
Exactly.
So Renata
exactly.
just knocks
Why
on the
not?
Door. Hey, you want to sell
you know,
your house?
Go knock on a door and say, hey, you know, I have a buyer that's willing, able, and ready. And you know,
have you ever done that?
I have done that.
And
yes.
have you had any success doing that?
Yes, I have.
Really?
Yes. I'm a people person. So if I knock on your door, I can talk to you. I can't call you, though. If I call you, I am a complete failure.
All right. Let's go to Rob in Albany. Rob, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Sure. Yep.
Yes, we can.
So let me give you this is another contract issue, except the opposite of what you did previously. It's a buyer who backed out. Mm-hmm. As a result, the seller did get another contract, but for $14,000 less than the original purchase price with the buyer who backed out. The question is, can damages be obtained based on those facts?
Why did the buyer back out? What was the reason? But
they found another home in the neighborhood that was less expensive, and they claimed to have just been unhappy with the current purchase and decided they would buy the other home. And we were told, frankly, that the cost of litigating would exceed even what we took a loss on, which was approximately $14,000, and that all we could get back would be the deposit, which was about $4,000. But we, quite frankly, are questioning what the purpose of these contracts are for when they can so easily be ignored.
This is a great question. Okay. Yeah.
Well, different state is a little different. In New York State, a buyer has several contingencies that protect them on the contract. Same contingencies default on the seller as well. However, the buyer can get out of the contract without any ramifications if they can't get a mortgage. So if financing falls through, they lose their job, they get sick, they can't work, that's a contingency for them to get out of the contract without any penalties. Home inspection contingency. If there is a major that's a red flag during the home inspection, that's a threshold of $1,500 or more, and the buyer decides it's something that they don't want to deal with or it's just too big of a factor for them, they do have a loophole to get out of the contract under that contingency. And then part of the mortgage contingency is also an appraisal. Should the appraisal not come in high enough at the contract price, that could be a loophole for that buyer to get out of that contract.
So okay, so absent those three conditions, which we were familiar with, just walking away because they found another house down the street for less money and just wanted to ignore this contract and just to walk away from it, we're kind of disillusioned with the legal system's role here because it seems like a pure mathematical formula. There's not enough money that we're shorted due to the decision of this buyer.
Yeah. Yeah, we got
to warrant the legal fees.
All right, Alex, you want to take a crack at this?
No, I think you, Rob, explained it really clearly. And I think that's the challenge is that the cost to litigate sometimes is more than the damages. And so oftentimes people decide not to. The hope is that, you know, the threat of litigation can keep people at the table. I guess some buyers may have a greater risk tolerance than others, and they might be willing to roll the dice and walk away and see if, in fact, you're going to sue them.
Rob, thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. For those who haven't purchased a home, take us through the process. At what point does that contract become, at least on paper, ironclad, minus the three right. reasons to bail
it's,
out.
It's during the attorney approval. So in this area locally, we negotiate not only the price, we negotiate the terms, the closing date, the mortgage, how much money they're putting down, any seller's concession, the inspections. Everything is negotiated into the contract. Everybody signs it. It's now a fully executed contract. It technically is a binding contract, but not at 100% because we're not attorneys. So it needs to be stamped by legal attorneys.
Yeah.
It goes into the attorney approval. It's a 3 business day attorney approval, unless it's written as a 5 day business attorney approval. At that point, both attorneys, the seller attorney and the buyer attorney, they review the contracts with their parties. Once they stamp it, it then becomes a legal contract.
From a consumer standpoint, doesn't it make sense that if at the last moment, before I have given you my money, if I'm buying a car, if Renata has a car, and I'm giving her, say it's a 1988 Corvette.
Nice.
And I'm giving
what
her,
color?
I don't know, red. And then all of a sudden, the next door neighbor says, well, I got one here and it's $5,000 left, less. I take my money back. I'll give it to that other person. Why is that not acceptable? You're spending a lot of money on a home. Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't you be able to back out until the money changes hands?
Sorry, Ray, you're saying that the buyer should be able to cancel the contract
yeah.
at any time?
Yeah, if something happens, absent the three contingencies we're talking about here, that there's a better deal. All of a sudden, there's a better deal.
Well, I guess because the seller, you know, there needs to be some sort of predictability here in the process, right? And if the sellers, in part of the agreement is the sellers are going to take it off the market. In accepting this contract, they're taking it off the market. They're not able to entertain
okay.
other offers.
I see your point.
Right? And so in exchange for that, they give the buyer 30 days or 45 days to pursue their process of inspections, mm-hmm. getting a mortgage, getting an appraisal. During that time, the seller's not entitled to entertain any other offers. So
yeah,
that's the bargain.
That's a valid point.
And it's a big one because, you know, this is the reason the inspections are done very quickly within 10 business days. We want to make sure that that inspection clears and we're moving forward with the process. So should something come up at the inspections and the buyers pull out, we are able to correct whatever issues have been alerted and move forward with releasing the contract and putting it back on the market.
But, you know, going back to Rob's call, I think he mentioned that the deposit and the fact that the buyer left, they were able to recoup that $4,000 mm-hmm. deposit. I think that's a valid point, and that is having a conversation with your realtor about what is the deposit you're going to be securing, because that's really the only collateral you have other
right.
than trying to pursue litigation.
And I'm glad you said that, because when I sold in Long Island, the earnest money deposit was at least 10%. So it was a big earnest money deposit.
That'll keep you at the table.
It keeps you at the table. Locally, the earnest money deposit is about 1%. So there's not a lot of money holding it together, which makes it difficult for the enforceability that Alex was talking about.
We're joined today by Renata Lewis and Alexander Monticello. We talk real estate on Vox Pop, and the number is 800-348-2551. We go over to Mike in Troy. Mike, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Question is, taking overbids over the asking price in a seller's market, it seems some sellers are getting their asking price real quick. Is taking overbids allowing some time to take them common? Should it be written into a seller's contract?
Wait, I didn't understand the question. Are you allowed to take overbids? Is that the question?
Yes, standard clause in the contract, or should that be in the contract? Because it would seem normally that you get your price, the property sold.
Oh.
But in a hot market for sellers, it might be advisable to have time to take bids over your asking price.
Here's the good news, Mike. As the seller, if you list your house for, say, $200,000, and somebody comes along and offers you $200,000, there's no obligation that you have to take that offer. You could mm-hmm. wait. So if you listed your house for $200,000 and you had 10 showings and the first person shows up with $200,000, you could absolutely say, you know, I want to wait and see what these other 9 buyers have to say. We always recommend, though, that that can be a little risky. Sometimes the bird in the hand is better than the bird in the bush. And so waiting for the higher offer, you might potentially lose what you have on the table. But you can mm-hmm. absolutely wait and for as long as you want.
So is this a common problem nowadays? In other words, getting your asking price and then a day later getting X percentage more.
It depends on the location, depends on the area, but we have definitely seen multiple offer situations. And when one does arise, we have to discuss with our sellers how they want to handle it. You could negotiate each offer individually. You could tell all the buyers on the table that, hey, we're going to make a decision by 6 p.m. on a Sunday. Present your highest and best offers. Time for everybody to improve their offer at that point. Again, multiple offers are great. It could be a good situation for a seller to be in, as they are going to, those multiple offers will bring the value up to where the buyers believe that house or that property is at. However, it could also be risky, because when we call a multiple offer situation, that $200,000 buyer that was on the table at full asking price, there is a risk of losing that buyer if we call a multiple offer situation, because now they don't want to compete with another offer. So again, talk to your agent about what market you're in, how they're handling the multiple offer situations. And it's not always about the price in a multiple offer situation, it's about the terms. When can they close? Do they have a house to sell? You know, what other terms are they throwing at you? And, you know, it may be worth taking an offer $2,000 less if the terms are much stronger and we're going to get it to the closing table sooner.
Are you ethically allowed? Say you have a hot property. Somebody comes in, buyer A comes in. Here's my $275. I want it. That's your asking price. Are you then allowed to go, say another offer comes in for $325, to tell buyer A, hey, we had an offer for $325. Do you want to match that? Is that ethical?
No, we can't tell them the actual amount. Again, first we talk to the seller. If the seller chooses to say, yes, go ahead and disclose that we have something else on the table, we can at that point.
But you can't say what amount?
No. It's because then it wouldn't be fair to somebody else, because then somebody else could come in at $326. I think that would make it a very challenging negotiation. I don't know. Help me out with this, Alex.
Well, I think you're right, Renata. Ultimately, it's really with the seller's choice, right? I think you want to talk it over with the seller. If the seller says, I like this first buyer, but I want them to know that the other offer is $50,000 above what they offered, and if they're willing to come up or come close, I'll still sell it to them, then I certainly would let buyer A know.
So that would be okay.
Yeah, as long as the seller consents, there's no prohibition against disclosing what the other offers are. Most of the time we don't, because you have a better chance of getting the maximum price if it's a blind bid, essentially.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break here. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Real Estate Today, back for the home stretch in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Rick Orlando's New World Home Cooking, Saugerties, New York. Since 1993, hosting a New Year's Eve buffet and dance party, NewWorldHomeCooking.com for reservations. Ye Old Warwick Bookshop, Warwick and Greenwood Lake. A bookseller specializing in new and vintage books and holiday gift ideas, YeOldWarwickBookshop.com. Myron Wine and Spirits, Kingston. Since 1960, a wine and spirit shop with thousands of imported and domestic wines and spirits and staff for questions and advice. Myron Wine and Spirits on Facebook. And Hooked Seafood Company in Galleria 7 Market, Latham. Fresh seafood retail market and kitchen with scratch-made lunch and dinner menu, raw bar, custom orders, and holiday platters available. HookedSeafoodINC.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you at 800-348-2551. Joined today by Alexander Monticello and Renata Lewis, and we talk real estate, and we'll get back to the phones in a moment. A few emails here we'll take care of. This one's from Fran. I have a 1,400 square foot, three bedroom, 1.5 bath, split level in Glenville, valued at $200,000, recent appraisal. I'm currently designing a grade level master suite around 300 square feet. Is making my home a four bedroom, 2.5 bath house at about $30,000 in a three bedroom development going to get me any return of investment if and when I sell? And that's an age old question. How much work to put in to make it worthwhile?
I think it all depends on how long you're going to stay there. And it's, you're doing this for your family, you're doing this for your enjoyment, so the answer on that would be go ahead and do it. As far as the value, if all of the houses are three bedrooms in the neighborhood, you will be the biggest and the best in the neighborhood, so the value could be compromised a little bit. However, if you are there at least 5 to 10 years, I think it will be minimal. And as long as it's done well and professionally, you will find a buyer that.
So don't have Uncle Dave come in with a hammer and a saw and get it done.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Unless Uncle Dave's very good. No, yes. No offense, Uncle Dave.
We like Uncle Dave.
This one is from Sarah. Do residential buyers take an interest in energy saving improvements like solar panels? It's from Sarah in Highland. Well, don't all answer at once.
Well, yeah, I think we've gotten this question before. So it depends on if the solar panels are leased or if the seller owns the solar panels.
Yeah.
I recently sold a home where there was about $40,000 worth of solar panels on the house, and that was included in the sale. And I think that provided value to the buyer. If they're leased, then I guess they're going to be a little bit more particular about the terms of the lease and how favorable they are.
How about generators? I want to get a generator.
Yeah, generators, it's kind of like an appliance, right? Oftentimes they're included, but it's good to write it into the contract if you have any questions about it.
All right, this one's from Tony. I built a weekend home in Hillsdale 10 years ago. It cost $1.3 million to build with the landscaping. Over the 2 years that the house has been on the market, we've dropped the price to $899,000, and we never had an offer. Any ideas? That's from Tony.
Well, I always tell people, Tony, there's two reasons why a house won't sell. One is price and the other is marketing, or it could be a combination of both. So, I don't know if they're currently listed with a realtor or how they're marketing the home now.
Okay.
But looking at the marketing strategy may help. And then talk to three different realtors and see what their price is.
You figure out what the average days on the market is. It's a vacation home. Vacation homes tend to sell longer, sit on the market bit longer. And that price point also is something to consider, because usually it takes a little bit longer to sell.
Okay.
Just piggybacking on what Renata said, and I think also with vacation homes, they're more seasonal in terms of when the buyers are looking. So if
Correct.
It's a ski home, right, that now in the winter might be the time to sell. If it's more of a summer home or a spring home when vacationers are visiting, that's the time to list it.
All right, this one is from Mark, and this will be the last email, and then we'll get back to the phones. Looking for advice for first-time buyers. For those of us with no home buying experience, how do you figure out what you can and cannot afford? How can a newbie avoid buying over their heads? And that's from Mark.
Well, first and foremost, you need to get in touch with a lender. Talk to somebody from the bank. Talk to somebody that knows mortgages. They will not only sit down and work with you on what your credit score is, what your budget limits would be. They take it a little bit backwards, where are you comfortable with a monthly payment, and how are we going to set that as far as an option in the kind of loan that we're going to be working with and what you could afford, which would include your taxes, your mortgage insurance, and anything else that gets added on into that monthly payment.
Just a nod. Oh, you're all set, Alex?
I'm so good.
Yeah, all right. High five each other. We'll go back to the phones. Dave in Pittsfield. Dave, you're on.
Hi. Yeah, good afternoon. I'm a potential seller. My question pertains to targeting a particular buyer demographic. A couple years ago, I consulted a realtor about putting my single-family house on the market. And he looked at the property and suggested $10,000 to $12,000 worth of repairs and improvements, with the idea of qualifying particularly for HUD home buying program for first-time buyers. And so I'm wondering how viable and robust that program is these days. What I'm ultimately getting at, I guess, is to what degree would you consider making a lot of improvements specifically to target that demographic of first-time home buyers who might be trying to finance through a HUD program, and maybe other considerations about the type of property that's best for that type of market.
So what's the price point of the property you have?
What would I think I would be selling it at right now?
Yeah.
I'm going to say somewhere between 150 and 180 maybe.
And when you mentioned the repairs, do they pertain to like peeling paint, or what were the repairs that they were recommending?
Well, you know, finishing a deck that had never really been put on, paint, replacement windows. Mm-hmm. The house is a 1934 Greek colonial.
So I guess I'm more familiar with the FHA requirements, which is FHA is a common loan that a first-time home buyer will get. And with an FHA mortgage, the bank is going to be looking at peeling paint, unfinished rooms or an unfinished deck, missing railings or broken windows. They're less concerned about an old window and more concerned about a broken window. So if you're able to qualify the home for an FHA buyer, which is a more common first-time home buyer, I would say that would be sufficient. I'm not as familiar with this other HUD program that you're talking about.
Well, you know, I may be confusing it with FHA, actually.
Okay.
So maybe that's what I really mean.
Yeah. So if you can get it, get it to suffice for an FHA buyer, and you can actually, the FHA guidelines are right online, but the biggest ones are peeling paint, railings, broken windows. That would probably be adequate.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. And Harvey in Savoy, Mass. Harvey, you're on.
Yes, thank you. I got a little bit of advice for a first-time home buyer, and I also got a story about canceling or walking away from a contract right at the table.
All right, splendid.
In front of the lawyers. Well, I was in the process of buying a house in Alabama, and I was working 80 hours a week on night shifts, and so I was going through. I went through four different financial lenders within the same building. It was just like a bait and switch every single time. So my head was spun. So I just said, just tell me how much money I need to bring to the table. So they told me that, and on the day of closing, I asked them, text me how much money I need to bring to the table. They did. I went up there and to start to sign papers, and apparently they didn't need an extra $5,000. So I walked.
Oh.
When I walked, I went back to the lending office, and I met a new guy, the financial manager. I don't know. He was a new individual, fourth, fifth person, and he said, told me the magic words, our window of opportunity is closing, and this is what we have for you, and he added an extra point. So I told him I was going to walk across the street and give him a little bit of time to figure something out, because this wasn't the original deal that we had originally talked about. Came back 30 minutes later, he didn't do anything. So I said, I'm going to go eat, and I will be back, and if you don't do something, I will walk.
What'd you have to eat?
I walked across the street. Sir?
What'd you have to eat?
About 8 beers.
Okay, good for you. All right, continue.
So I had 8 beers. I came back there, looked at the paper, nothing changed. I signed.
Huh.
Went home the next day. I did my homework. And I found the lending company's, the vice president's phone number, and I called him.
Yeah.
I told him everything I'd done. I had the receipt. In Alabama, if I remember correctly, I can't sign any legal documents while you're under the influence of any alcohol or drugs.
Okay. Let's cut to the chase here, Harvey.
So I told him what I'd done. I said, this is what I was told. This is what I wanted. And now we're adding an extra point, and they're telling me that they need an extra $5,000 at the table. So, no, I'm sorry. I'm going to walk.
Okay.
Well, he said, I tell you what, when I get to the office, I will look at your files, and I will call you back. In about 2 hours, he called me back. He says, if I give you what you want, because I did my homework and I explained everything that I'd wanted. It was an FHA. And will you buy the house? He said, absolutely. That's all I wanted. It's the problem was is I had four different financial lenders that I was dealing with in the same office, and each one just kept disappearing.
Oh, man. Do you have a question for our real estate agents?
Well,
do you have a question?
Well, when it's talking about walking away from contracts, it's really not that hard. You just got to put your mind to it. I could have went out and bought another vehicle.
Yeah, I get you. Hey, Harvey, thanks for the call. Any comments on that? All right. Go ahead, Renata.
I don't suggest it.
Okay, fair enough. The eight beers part sounded pretty good. Let's go to Joan and Amherst. Joan, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
We've been somewhat chastened by the shows that are on TV, the Flip and Flop and all that, where the young couple comes in and inevitably the girl says, "Oh, I hate that color. I couldn't possibly buy this house." I wanted to ask your experts, how often does that happen? When we were youngsters, we bought and sold houses like crazy and always went in and expected to put our own touches on the houses. How prevalent is it for now for buyers to want everything perfect and to object to even buying a gallon of paint?
I like that question, Joan.
It's a great question, Joan. And, you know, I have to say, the younger generation, that's exactly what they expect. They don't have the time. They don't have the imagination. They don't have the money. A lot of times when they purchase that home, every single cent and liquid money that they have will go into the down payment. It will go into the closing costs. And they're literally moving into a home that they don't have to do anything. And I'm not saying completely perfect, but they do want an updated bathroom. They do want an updated kitchen. They don't want the wallpaper. They don't want the carpeting. You know, they're being told by parents and everybody else that they talk to, newer roof, newer furnace, or you're going to have all these headaches. Mm. Ultimately, I feel that a turnkey home is worth a lot more than somebody may think it is. It really will get you the top dollar, if not higher, based on, you know, what the younger generation would
These
want.
These kids today, eh, Alex?
Everybody's pointing to me.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, sometimes if painting a more neutral or brighter color is worth the investment.
Okay.
So
yeah, I always tell my sellers, paint is the cheapest way of updating your home. It
agreed.
really is. It's just paint it. We love this wall color. We've lived with it for 20 years. I'm glad you did. I'm glad you loved it. Paint it neutral. It's going to be fresh paint. It's going to look nicer, and buyers receive it very well.
How expensive is a wrecking ball? Just question. Asking for a friend. Kate and Oneonta. Kate, you're on.
Oh, hi. I'm going to piggyback off with the woman just previous said about walking into turnkey or whatever.
Yeah.
My original question was, when you go to price your house, do you have a formula for that? Because my house is pretty much turnkey, but I really put a lot of money into the roof and the windows and the basics and the foundation, thinking the same thing the other woman was thinking, that they're just going to come in and change it all as far as wallpaper and, you know, colors and things like that. So, because right now I do have my house on the market and they're asking me to drop the price, which is tough, you know, when you have a lot of money invested in your home. Mm. So it's only been on the market for 6 months.
Okay. Alex first.
So is there a formula you go by?
Well, the formula in terms of evaluating the price would be looking at similar homes in that neighborhood that have sold over the last 12 months, in particular over the last 6 months.
They did do that.
They did do that, yeah. So then,
like three.
What's that?
Only three. They only came up with like three or four.
Okay.
But one has sold.
Okay. But
yeah.
Also, that's an educated guess in terms of what the value of the house is. The best way to figure out the value of the house is by putting it on the market and marketing it correctly. You'll get an even better idea, which it sounds like it's been on the market now for 6 months. As we mentioned earlier, that may be an indication that it's either priced too high or maybe not marketed correctly. The other unfortunate thing is that the house is not worth the sum of all of its parts, unfortunately. So when you do when you add up the cost of new roof and a new window and a foundation work, oftentimes it's going to be more than what you're going to get back on the sale. And so we recommend, if you know you're going to be selling, as Renata mentioned earlier, not to do a ton of major improvements before you put it on the market. That being said, a well-maintained home, I think, will capture a little bit more value because buyers like to move into homes that have been cared for, even if they might be a little dated.
All right, we only have a minute here, a minute and a half. Let's go to Cindy in Springfield. Cindy, you're on.
Hi, thanks so much. How you guys doing?
Okay.
So I'm looking at a really cute little, and I mean little, house in my hometown of Ware, Massachusetts, and I would love to consider it. 840 square feet, and don't you know, it doesn't even have a driveway.
Nice.
I walked around the other night, and I thought, okay. I personally took a realtor course last year, but I didn't do the license. But I know a few things. So
okay.
It's grossly overpriced, in my opinion, at $100,000.
All right.
How can I make a salient case so I can approach the seller through his broker or whomever so that we can start seeing a little more eye to eye so I can actually make some progress on this?
All right. 30 seconds.
Do you have an agent that you're working with?
Not currently, but I will.
Okay. You definitely should speak to another agent that will be representing in your best interest. And at that point, really look at some comps that have sold for less.
Comps being comparable.
Comparable homes that sold for less. So you guys have a backbone to go in with negotiating the price.
Okay. That's where we will have to leave this program today. Renata Lewis, how do we find out more about your exciting offerings?
Check me out on renatashomes.com.
Fair enough. And Alexander Monticello.
MonticelloNYS.com.
Well, you've both done very, very well.
Thank you.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Same to you. Support comes from Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete on countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services at a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. NatureWorks Organic Land Care, specializing in innovative ecological landscape construction of outdoor living spaces, all organic food systems and garden features, design installation, and organic maintenance. NatureWorksLandCare.com. And Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans with weekly tastings, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins, grapesandgrainswine.com. Thanks again to Renata Lewis and Alexander Monticello for being here. Thanks to you for the great calls and the emails. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Your phones are answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we'll discuss the top news stories of 2017. Right now, stand by for news.